Danny, I just figured out that if I switch to Metro PCS, I get two Samsung Galaxy phones free.
Cool, Dad.
And I could be a super dad with two free Samsung Galaxy phones and call myself Double Galaxy Man.
Or you could give the second phone to your sidekick.
Yeah, I guess I could do that.
That's right. Two free Samsung Galaxy On 5 smartphones are all yours when you switch to Metro PCS. Metro PCS. Wireless figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included in phone price. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network. See store for details and terms and conditions.
What's the difference between bacon,
bacon,
and
bacon?
It's in the prep, because flimsy microwave bacon can taste meh. That's why Wendy's oven bakes their bacon for crispy slices of applewood smoked bacon that taste. Place it on fresh, never frozen beef, and you've got a junior bacon cheeseburger. It's the star of Wendy's 4 for $4 meal. Yeah, for just $4, you get a JVC, four nuggets, fries, and a Coke. Not to mention that crispy bacon that makes the 4 for $4 so deliciously different. At participating Wendy's for a limited time. Offer includes small fries and a drink. Not valid in Alaska and Hawaii. Fresh beef available in the contiguous U.S. and Canada.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Show Talk with Angela Bowles. This afternoon, our guest is Terry Tavares. How are you this afternoon, Gary Tavares?
I'm doing well.
What was your primary reason for writing Predator on the Diamond, the Boston Red Sox youth molestation story?
Well, I actually wrote it about, I'd say, maybe six, seven years ago. I met a gentleman who actually, of course, is grown now, who told me, you know, about the story. I mean, when I came here, I just would put up flyers that I'm a writer and stuff like that, author. And then a couple of days later, a gentleman contacted me and says that he had a powerful story for me. And, you know, when you're a writer, you hear that all the time. You know, I have a story for you. And so I didn't, you know, put too much stock into it, but I did go ahead and meet the gentleman, and he did tell me about the story, and I didn't believe it was true. And so I did some digging, and I found out that the story is actually true. In the story, I was really shocked that the story had never been told in the form of a book or a movie or anything like that. So I was really shocked about that. So actually, I wrote the movie script version, and I had been sitting on it for all this time. It wasn't really doing anything. And then when the Penn State Sandusky case happened, I thought that this is something that needs to be told also. It's just as important, you know, a story that needed to be told. So that was what... That was why I said now is the time to do this, because when you're an author, as you know, sometimes it's all about the timing of a story. Maybe 7 years ago it wouldn't have been, you know, had as much impact as it will have now and over the next probably months or years.
Okay. Have the characters' names been changed?
Yes. All the characters' names have been changed in the book. And except for the actual convicted predator, I did not change the convicted predator's name because it's a public record that he was a predator. But like I said, even though a lot of people don't know about it, so his name is the only name that's the real name that I use. All the boys and the victims in the book, I had to change their name. So therefore, they actually call the book, they call it, based on reality or based on a true story, and they say that it's fictionalized because I did not use actual names. They consider that fictionalized.
Okay. The main character, William Jones, is one of the victims of Donald Fitzpatrick. Did he ever get paid by the Boston Red Sox? I know they, in the end they sued, so did he ever get paid, the main character?
No, he did not get paid. Him, as far as I knew, that his lawyer wanted more money. You know, I mean, his lawyer felt that they were being cheated, you know, as far as the settlement. And so, you know, as far as I knew, he had not gotten paid, at least at the time I did the story. He had not got. He was one that did not get paid. There was, I think, one other person that did not take the settlement, you know, out of the possibly as many as a dozen. He was like this one that did not. And I think part of the settlement was that they would not be able to tell the story. You know, that was part of the settlement. But he didn't sign the settlement or anything like that, so, or take the settlement. So that was why he was able to actually talk about the story.
Okay. And which city and state did the events happen to the children?
This actually took place in Winter Haven, Florida. This the molestations are believed to have happened between 1971 and 1991 in that city, Winter Haven, Florida. And many of the boys came out of Poolsville, Florida, as far as I know. Fitzy is believed to have worked in that organization as a clubhouse manager from the 60s through that time period, 91. Okay.
How many of your boys is Donald Fitzpatrick believed have molested, and what was his title as with the Boston Red Sox? What did he do?
Well, he was a clubhouse manager, so he was in charge of the equipment. But, you know, like he was in charge of cleaning the equipment, making sure that the players had fresh equipment, clean equipment, you know, the bats, the hats, all that stuff. You know, they took care of the toting of the bats, and you know, they had bat boys, all of those things you see the young kids doing at the ballpark. He was responsible for, he was over all of the young kids. They were called clubbies.
Okay. How many young boys is Donald Fitzpatrick believed to have molested? And what type of characteristics did the victims that he chose have in common?
Now, say the first question one more time.
How many boys is Donald Fitzpatrick believed to have molested? And what type of characteristics did the victim that he chose have in common?
He's believed to have molested at least a dozen boys over that period. And it could be more that have come forth since I've written the story. Like I said, I wrote the story probably about 6-7 years ago. So in this time, I hadn't done any more further investigation on it since I wrote the story, but more boys may have come forward, you know, since those allegations.
Okay. What type of characteristics did the victims that he chose have in common?
Well, Donald Fitzpatrick preferred young African-American boys. That was his preference. And he targeted the ones that were poor in the inner city that did not have, you know, a father or male figure in the household. That was the victims that he targeted.
Okay. Were all of them black, or were some of other races?
As far as I know, there was other races that worked in the organization, but as far as I know, his preference was young African American boys. That was his preference.
Okay. All right. That was his preference. Okay. Between what time period did each child molestation take place? And were they all boys as far as you know?
Yes. As far as I know, they were all boys, all males that were molested.
Okay. How did the Boston Red Sox handle the young boys' allegations at first?
Well, When the story surfaced about this, it was like in 2001. Of course, many of these kind of a switching of the guard. The old ownership from Boston Red Sox were switching over to a new ownership, and the new ownership, you know, pretty much wanted to bury this. They didn't want this ruining the new Boston Red Sox organization. So it was something that they really wanted to settle quickly and sweep under the rug, you know, once the new organization took over. So I can actually real briefly read the Red Sox statement that they had on Donald Fitzpatrick, which is also in the book. This is the statement that they had about Donald Fitzpatrick. And it says, Mr. Fitzpatrick served as the team's clubhouse manager from the 1960s until 1991, and the actions you have inquired about occurred between 71 and 91, when the team, then under a previous ownership group, became aware of the allegations against Mr. Fitzpatrick in 91, he was promptly relieved of his duties. Civil litigation was filed in 2001 by victims of Mr. Fitzpatrick for actions that had occurred more than 20 years earlier. The team, which was acquired by the current ownership group after the lawsuit was filed, reached a settlement in 2002. Mr. Fitzpatrick has since passed away. The Red Sox have always viewed the actions of Mr. Fitzpatrick to be aberrant.
Aberrant,
which means, you know, pretty much outrageous, you know. So they pretty much passed, you know, although it's believed that the organization knew that this was taking place, and at least the old ownership knew that this was taking place over those years and chose to turn their backs to it. So, you know, it's a possibility that maybe they sold the organization to get away from these allegations.
How many of the youth that he molested, how have the lives turned out?
Well, many of them are, you know, on drugs. Some of them have passed on since that. Many of them never really got their lives on track after that. They had alcohol, drug addiction. They had anger. They had violence, domestic violence. Many of them ended up being locked up with criminal activities. There were some that rose above the top and was able to overcome it, but there wasn't very many from the group that came forward that were able to overcome issues that arose from the molestation.
Is this typical for you to have been molested? Is this typical for them to turn out this way?
Yeah, it is actually, from the studies that I've done on it, it is actually pretty common for this to happen with any type of person who is molested or abused. It is typical behavior for them to have anger and sometimes act out, and it could trying to numb the pain from it. They can sometimes go to drugs and alcohol. They can become abusers themselves, whether it be pedophile or domestic abusers. They can also become child abusers themselves. So, you know, it's not uncommon for them to have some sort of problem, you know, in their adult years from the interactions that they have as children. It's not uncommon.
Okay. How was Donald Fitzpatrick able to gain the trust of the parents and at that time, the youth?
He targeted parents that didn't really have a strong male role model or father in a family. He actually would go to the inner city around like Poolsville, around the ballpark, and he would actually you know, go to the neighborhoods, give the kids stuff, treat the kids, you know, give them memorabilia and stuff like that. And he actually would recruit them. He would go see their parents, and he did this for many years, recruiting the kids that worked in those inner-city neighborhoods. And he gained the parents' trust, you know, the parent or parents' trust, and convinced them that, convinced them that, you know, this was a great opportunity for their child, and it would give them responsibility. It would help them, you know, grow into the, you know, to be good boys or men, and this was a great opportunity for them to meet some of the great athletes that they always wanted to know and get to know and stuff like that in the organization, some great baseball players that they would be pretty much, you know, rubbing shoulders with, as you know. And so that was something that was appealing to these young boys, you know, who lived not that far from the ballpark. And it was the Winter Haven, Florida. It was, you know, Chain of Lakes Ballpark. I don't know if it's there now, but that was the name of it, the Chain of Lakes Ballpark, Winter Haven, Florida.
Okay.
But that was when they it actually took place in between those years was when in Winter Haven was when the Boston Red Sox had that as their spring training facility. So, you know, mainly during the spring season, which I believe started in back then started in like about February or so, that would be their spring training facility right there in Winter Haven, Florida, up until I believe it was like 91 or 92 when the Cleveland took over that stadium. But I don't know what the status of that stadium is now.
Okay. How was Donald Fitzpatrick when he was finally called?
How was he finally caught?
How was he finally caught?
Well, actually what happened was it was during a nationally televised game. I don't remember what city it was in, but it was a nationally televised game. A young kid raised up a sign in the audience. It said, "Donald Fitzpatrick molested me." And this ended up on, I believe it ended up on, it was a national game. I don't really know for sure that it ended up, the cameras catching it or not. But from what I understand, they escorted that gentleman out of the ballpark. And he's believed to have been given $100,000. And I believe, I'm not 100% sure, but I believe that the guy that did that was actually a Caucasian gentleman, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
It actually did that.
Okay. Now, when I read the book, I noticed that the main character hadn't been compensated. Have the others been compensated by what happened, you know, about being molested and everything? I know there was a civil lawsuit. Have they been compensated besides just one?
I know that there was, back when the allegation, well, there weren't allegations, it actually happened because, I mean, the predator admitted to it, so they weren't really allegations. So, but when these charges came out, there was what they called the Winter Haven 7. It was seven of them initially that came forward in the lawsuit, the class action lawsuit. It was seven of them. And I know that those, as far as I know, at least seven of them did get settlements. I know the total settlement back then was, I think, $3 million was the settlement, but that might have been for more than just the seven kids. I mean, seven
okay.
men at that time. It might have been for more. It might have been for as many as a dozen, because that's how many he says believed to have, at least a dozen. But like I said, they started out with seven coming forward, and then others have come forward since I did the story. So I noticed the overall settlement was like $3 point something million.
Okay. All right, listeners, we're going to go to break.
Okay.
A special event can be very challenging and stressful at times. Our staff of professionals organizes your event down to every last detail, no matter what size. Our creativity and attention to detail turns your ordinary party into an extraordinary event. And Decline provides world-class service. We coordinate quality events. We can provide travel arrangements, accommodations, event sites, caterers, tours, photographers, transportation, hairstylists and makeup artists, daily lighting rooms, and pre-event information such as detailed maps, save-the-date cards, and invitations. Being a custom event planner means that we cater to you. It is our job to find the best possible way to present your event. We have been referred to as Dream Weavers.
Listeners, don't forget to contact Nobinding Towers Mortgage Investments. This company can handle all of your commercial financing needs, so contact them at 678-607-5092 and allow them to handle all your commercial finance. And tell them that Show Talk with Angela Butler sent you or Angela Butler sent you. Their website is http://dobyne.webs.com. Also, if you are interested in learning to know how to improve your credit, or if you want to establish business credit, call Dobyne Towers at 678-607-5092 or go to their website and sign up. All right, listeners, this afternoon we have with us Mr. Gary Tavares. He is the author of Predator on the Diamond, the Boston Red Sox Youth Molestation Story. Gary.
Yes.
What are your thoughts, your own thoughts about this whole tragic events for the now that he was able to get away with for so many years? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, my thoughts on it is, I think that one of the reasons that I think that this story needs to be told is the fact that, you know, this has probably gone on in other organizations. It goes on a lot in our communities around us. We hear it in the news every day, and I just felt that this is something that needs to be addressed. And we need to know that this is happening in our major league sports. It's, you know, your kids really need to be safeguarded. And so I felt the way I wrote the story, I wrote it in a way that people could actually learn from it. You know, I show how the predator works, how he gained their trust, how, you know, these people are in our communities. You know, in our, you know, community centers, in our sports organizations for the kids, you know, little league teams. So I just wanted, you know, to show how this is going on. And then when the Penn State case broke, I said, and everybody was saying that this is the biggest thing that happened in sports, I said, you know, wait a minute, that's not the biggest thing that happened in sports. It's the biggest story that has been told in sports, but what I feel is even much bigger, you know. And there's another story within this story that I don't tell about in my, you know, when I do the synopsis of the book, on the back of the book, there's another scandal within that scandal that I included in the book, and this was the fact that the actual ball players, you know, would send the young black boys to their inner city neighborhood to bring them back cocaine and drugs. So that took place also, you know. So that's another thing. These guys, these young boys were exposed to drugs and alcohol within the organization, you know.
Okay.
So this is something else that needed to be addressed, because that's another story within itself too.
Okay. What should parents do to protect their children who are involved within sports? I'm not saying that everybody is a predator that's in sports, but for those that are predators and they're in the sports, or the sports arena or in the schools, what can parents do to protect their children from these type of predators, and what do they have to look for in order to know if this is going on with their children?
You know, I would say that that is probably one of the hardest questions to answer, and that is because, for the main and simple reason, we just don't know who they are, and some of them, you know, the first thing they do is establish your trust, you know, and so that is their main focus, to establish your trust so that you don't believe that they, you know, you would never expect and, you know, them to do anything. And usually when you hear of somebody in the news doing it, you know, most of the time the people that were around them would say, oh, well, we didn't know he was like that. We didn't know he even was doing that or whatever, or he was so nice. He did this for them, that for them. That's what they do. They win, you know, credibility over on you, and that, so it's very difficult. And the only thing I can think of is basically safeguard your children. We can't be too quick to just pass our children off to any adult, because every adult doesn't have good intentions, you know. So we have to safeguard our children, and no matter where, what organization we're sending them in, you know, we have to really safeguard them and do parenting for them. And
okay.
We have to, I think another thing, real briefly, I think another thing we need to do is we need to educate our youth at a young age about this issue. You know, I mean, victimization, predators, they have to know about this at young ages. And they have to know, you know, some of the things that they do. That's why I think the book is very important, because it shows, you know, how the you know, a lot of these predators act, you know, and how they win the child over. So, you know, if your child, you should have an open line of conversation with your child, and they should be able to come to you if someone touches them inappropriately in any way. You should establish an open line of communication with your child so that they can come to you if that happens.
Yes, I know when I was growing up, my mother taught me, and I know she taught my other brothers and sisters, because there's six of us in all, from my mother. My mother taught us about the good touch and the bad touch. So... I always remember that growing up. When did Donald Fitzpatrick plead guilty? What year?
I would say that was in 2002. The investigation was launched by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement in 2001. He pled guilty in 2002. At that time, he was around, I believe he was in his 70s at that time.
What sentence did he get when he pled guilty?
He served no time in prison. He was given a 10-year suspended sentence and 15 years probation and sent home back to Boston.
Okay. Did he ever say why he did what he did?
I don't remember him saying, you know, I haven't read any court filings that said that he did apologize or anything for what he did, as far as I know. I'm not saying he didn't, but I don't know that he did.
Do you believe, and do statistics show, that most people who are child molesters or pedophiles, that they have been molested themselves as children?
Yes, and as I said, in a large percentage of the population that has been molested, you know, many of them do become the molester themselves, and you know, it happened with with actually some of these victims in this case, you know, or abusers in some form or sense of the word, you know, whether it be domestic abuse, you know, spousal abuse, child abuse, you know, abusing child, so physically abused, you know, sexually abusing. Yeah, in many cases, you know, they act out in some way, you know, or like I said, they can become drug addicts, or they can be, you know, and I'm not saying that everybody who's a victim of this is going to go do something wrong or is a bad person. I don't want people to get that. There are many people that have to overcome that, you know, and there's a lot of people who overcome these becoming victims of this all the time, you know, but it's a tough road for them. You know, it's very tough when, you know, your innocence has basically been stripped away from you. Your youth has been stripped away from you, and you don't know who you are, you know. So.
Okay. Is there anything else you would like to add before, you know, the show ends, like for the listeners and folks to buy your book?
Well, they could actually go to Amazon.com. I just listed it on Amazon. You can get it as a paperback book for $19.95, or you can get it as a Kindle, Amazon Kindle ebook reader. I know a lot of people have those Kindle ebook readers or Nook ebook readers, and you can download it off Amazon for only $9.99, so half the price to download it. So you can go to Amazon.com, type in my name, Gary, G as in golf, Tavares, T-A-V-A-R-E-S. You can type that in. I am the author, and everything I've written will probably pop up on Amazon. But, yeah, you can also type in the title, which is Predator on the Diamond, : The Boston Red Sox Youth Molestation Story. That's Predator on the Diamond, : The Boston Red Sox Youth Molestation Story. They can look that up on Amazon and my book will pop up. Or they can call me directly if they have any problems or want to talk to me about it directly. And my cell number is 678-437-4496. That's 678-437-4496. And I'm the author. My name is Gary Tavares. I'm also the publisher of the book and CEO and founder of Tavares Entertainment, LLC, here in Atlanta, Georgia.
And, have any of the books that you've written, that you wrote?
Yes. I wrote another compelling story. This one is the urban fiction. It's called Deceptive Vows. And it's actually a very good book dealing with the issue of domestic violence. And you can also get that one from Amazon.com as an ebook or regular book, Deceptive Vows. Of course, it would be by Gary Tavares. I think it might be the only book under that direct name. But Deceptive Vows is another book that I address issues that we face every day in our communities. And I feel that as a writer, I feel responsible to, you know, use my talent to give something back to our community and deal with these community issues that we do have through my writing, through the gift I was given. So I like to tackle issues like this. And actually, before I do tackle them, I do go do some investigative stuff. I go to the bookstore. I read up on the subject. Before I did Deceptive Vows, it was a play years ago in California called Until Death Do Us Part. Before I did the play, I actually, in Concord, California, I went to a domestic violence, you know, center in Concord, and I interviewed several women, you know, and so, you know, and the same thing I did with this book, I interviewed one of the victims. Well, I'd rather call them survivors. I really don't like calling them victims.
Yes, they are definitely survivors.
I call them survivors. So anybody, I don't want to offend anybody by calling you a victim, because you are not a victim. You are a survivor. So I have to apologize for that. So anybody who is a survivor, like I said, I don't want to demonize anybody who's a survivor either, because like I said, it's a mountain for you to climb over. But I mean, it's not something that many people have not overcome, you know. And it's not necessarily your fault. You should not hate yourself for what happened, you know. And if you need help, then there is help out there, you know. And you know what I wanted to do, if we have time, is just read a few of the statistics that I have.
Okay, that's fine.
These are actually statistics that are from the book, and you can stop me if we run out of time or we have a commercial. Just stop me, okay?
Go ahead.
The serial killer has the same personality characteristics as the sex offender against children. That's Dr. Mace Knapp, Nevada State Prison psychologist. There are 400,000 registered sex offenders in the United States, and an estimated 80 to 100,000 of them are missing. They're supposed to be registered, but we don't know where they are, and we don't know where they're living. That's Ernie Allen, president of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. The most serious and chronic offenders often show signs of antisocial behavior as early as the preschool years. That's the American Psychiatric Association. Dr. Jean Abel estimates that between 1% and 5% of our population molest children. That's CNN Specials transcripts. Nearly all the offenders in sexual assaults report to law enforcement were male, 96% of them. Sexual assault of young children as reported to law enforcement, the United States Department of Justice. Overall, 23% of sexual assault offenders were under the age of 18, and 77% were adults. Sexual assault of young children as reported to law enforcement. 40% of the offenders of victims under age 6 were themselves juveniles. A similar proportion, 39% of offenders of victims ages 6 through 11 were also juveniles. For older juvenile victims, the proportion of juvenile offenders dropped 27%. That sexual assault of young children as reported to law enforcement. Adults were the offenders in 60% of the sexual assaults of youth under age 12. Rarely were the offenders of young victims strangers. Strangers were the offender in just 3% of sexual assaults against victims under age 6 and 5% of sexual assault victimizations of youth ages 6 through 11. That's sexual assault of young children as reported to law enforcement. So just reading those that I've read, you can see that in a lot of cases, the people who, the predators actually either get to know the person, or it could be someone who actually knows the person.
Yes.
You know, and in some cases, it's even a distant family member, or it could be a stepfather, or it could be, you know, so it could be somebody who is trusted with that child, as you can see in many of these statistics.
Yes,
and
I see that.
And for them not to know where, you know, more than a fourth of these predators are in the United States, that is scary. And we could have one living right next to us, because
mm-hmm.
you know
That's right.
nobody, yeah. No, like I said, one-fourth of them are unaccounted for. 100,000 out of 400,000 are unaccounted for. They just don't know where they are. They never reported when they got out of prison. They just go out into the population. So, you know, it's just scary to know that there's predators, that many predators in our, amongst us that, you know, that can actually you know, victimize our children. You know, it's a scary thought.
Yes,
you know?
It is. Yes, it is. It's a very scary thought. All right.
So,
Mr. Tavares, I thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. Would you give the
information where you, where the listeners can go to buy your book?
Yes, I'll do that again. Yeah, I'll do that one more time. They can go to Amazon.com. Actually, I didn't mention before, I listed my book, a subsidiary of Amazon.com, which is Create Space. That's www.createspace.com. That's all one word. You can go there and you can get Predator on the Diamond. You can get Predator on the Diamond from Create Space also. Or you can go to my website if you want to get the paperback edition. Of course, I don't have the ebook edition on my website, but I do have the paperback edition, which is also $19.95. But if you get it from me, then of course you'll get it autographed. You get an autographed copy. And my website is www.tavaris, that's T as in Tom, A, B as in Victory, A, R, E, S, Tavaris Entertainment, E, N, T, E, R, T, A, I, N as in Nancy, M as in Mary, E, N, T, .net, www.tavarisentertainment.net, all one word. You can go there and you can click on Publish Books, and all the books I've published are on that page. And they all have Buy Now buttons, including the one about the Boston Red Sox. And the Buy Now button sends you to the secure PayPal site. PayPal will give me the information to send you the book to, and it'll be autographed if you wanted to have the autographed copy.
All right. You have been a service to the community, and you wrote the book. I read the book, and you're very talented. I thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. I just want to say you keep doing what you're doing. You're helping people.
Thank you. I really appreciate you spending the time to have me on the show.
And I hope they turn it into a movie or a film.
Yeah, I hope so, too. Like I said, I actually have wrote the film version of it, too. That's what I had been sitting on for like about 7 years, the film version I wrote on. I never really took that forward or anything like that. So now I have the book and the movie.
Yes, it's the story that needs to be told, the same as about Penn State, where the Sandusky man molested all the youth, all those young people. This story needs to be told too, and you told it. But
yeah,
I wish it was on a bigger platform. That's all.
Yeah, ironically, I didn't mean to cut you off, but ironically, from what I understand, on the Dr. Phil show today, they had some victims from the Sandusky case on his show today, ironically.
Okay.
So, whenever the victims do come forward, then, you know, it gives power to others to come forward. Once again, I'm saying the word victim, but survivors.
Survivors.
When survivors do come forward, it gives, you know, hope for other survivors who've been holding that in for many, many years, you know. And I really don't believe anybody just uses that as a payday or anything like that. I really believe that this occurs in our communities. So we need to, you know, definitely take a hard look at this and address it and expose the predators and the organizations that know about them. And in order to keep their name clean, sweep it under the rug. And it doesn't matter whether it's religious organizations, and I don't mention no type of names of religion because I'm not trying to offend anybody, but we all know it's in religious organizations, some of them.
Yes.
So, you know, no matter what organization is, if they are going to allow this to go on, then, you know, to me, it's not worthy for them, you know, people to go to their establishments for worship or for sports or for community events. You know, I mean, these organizations, you know, the Red Sox knew this was going on. And, you know, over the years, they knew it, you know. some of the youth went forward to management, but it never got, you know, nothing ever got done about it. You know, the players knew about this. There was even a standing joke about, you know, 50 liking them little black boys, those, you know, those club, you know, 50's boys, 50's clubby boys, you know, and stuff like that. So they knew about it, you know, and to them it was somewhat of a joke, which is sad to me that they would let this go on.
Yes, so, it is. It's tragic.
Yeah, so I thank you for having me on so that I can.
And I thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler, Gary Tavares.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night. Listeners, you've been listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. The guest tonight was author Gary G. Tavares, author of Predator on the Diamond, the Boston Red Sox Youth Molestation Story. He gave you his information where you could go to buy the book. So if you're interested in buying the book, please do so. Support our authors, and thank you for listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. And don't forget to tune in tomorrow night. Thank you all. Have a good night.
What's the difference between bacon,
bacon,
and
bacon?
It's in the prep, because flimsy microwave bacon can taste meh. That's why Wendy's oven bakes their bacon for crispy slices of applewood smoked bacon that tastes Place it on fresh, never frozen beef, and you've got a junior bacon cheeseburger. It's the star of Wendy's 4-for-4 meal. Yeah, for just $4, you get a JVC, 4 nuggets, fries, and a Coke. Not to mention that crispy bacon that makes the 4-for-4 so deliciously different. At participating Wendy's for a limited time, offer includes small fries and a drink. Not valid in Alaska and Hawaii. Fresh beef available in the contiguous U.S. and Canada.
Yo, everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like GEICO is more than just a company that can save you money. GEICO also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Danny, I just figured out that if I switch to Metro PCS, I get 2 Samsung Galaxy phones free.
Cool, Dad.
And I could be a super dad with 2 free Samsung Galaxy phones and call myself Double Galaxy Man.
Or you could give the second phone to your sidekick.
Yeah, I guess I could do that.
That's right. 2 free Samsung Galaxy On 5 smartphones are all yours when you switch to Metro PCS. Metro PCS. Wireless figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included in phone price. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network. See store for details and terms and conditions.